Hello and welcome to episode 19 of When the Flames Go Up, the ATFC podcast with me, Will Brown. It's a big one. It's a big one. There's a lot of frustration in the panel this evening. So just ride the wave. This podcast is going to talk about Hartlepool away for a little bit. The tour of duty there. We've got Ash, who's going to give us kind of his thoughts on Hartlepool and Gateshead. He went to both, and obviously we know what happened. Gateshead game gets postponed 15 minutes before kickoff, and all the kind of fallout from that. I did try and record some sound recordings during the weekend. Lost complete faith of it on Saturday. I've just listened to them back. They will never be, not another soul will hear those. Not another soul. Absolute drivel. Imagine, I don't know, I can't even describe to you what it sounded like. But the reality was, give a man 8 pints and then see what comes out the other end, out of his mouth. And yeah, horrendous. So I'll try and give a little bit of a summary of the weekend in the outro, because I don't want to bore you right now. We've got a panel of Joe, Ian and Julian on the pod today. Julian joined us a bit later, so you might not hear his thoughts on the Hartlepool / Tour of Duty game, but you'll hear his thoughts on Gateshead. And it'll hopefully sound seamless, depending on my editing and how much effort I put in. So yeah, we discussed the Hartlepool away, Gateshead away postponement, and the fallout from that, as well as looking ahead to the Boreham Wood at home game on Saturday afternoon, 5:30 kickoff, and it's Aldershot's last home game of the season, at least of the regular season. Can't see us finishing fourth or fifth, so that's it, unfortunately. So hope everyone enjoys their Saturday out watching this team for one last time with Josh Stokes and Laurent Tolaj, I imagine, and hopefully we can finish on a high. That's about all from me. I mean, it's going to be a slightly long and truncated episode, I'm sure, but enjoy it. If you've got any questions or comments you want to leave, send them to atfcpodcast@gmail.com. I'll pick them up. We're getting to the end of the season now, so I guess I would love your thoughts on your best memories of the season. Maybe best goal as well. I mean, I know it's a podcast, but you know, we can try and describe some goals. There's been some pretty good ones this year. So, yeah, feel free to send them in and debate them in the comments section, I'm sure. All that remains to say, enjoy the episode. Speak to you after. So, you join us here on Wednesday afternoon or evening. Yesterday was the game that never was. Gateshead away for Aldershot Town, postponed 20 minutes before kickoff. That's to tease what's coming up later, because we can't talk about that until we've talked about Hartlepool away, which was on the Saturday, the Tour of Duty match. So some colourful support from the Shots faithful up in the northeast, but a 2-0 defeat. Ryan Glover clumsily taking a Hartlepool player down in the box to give them a penalty, which Emmanuel Dicerere slotted away. Brilliant penalty as well. Top right corner. Nothing Geordie could do. And despite Aldershot's kind of knocking on the door, I wouldn't say we were banging on the door, we couldn't get the equaliser, and Tom Parks straight from a corner made it 2-0 in the 86th minute. And that was that. So that now means Aldershot have only scored 2 goals in the last 5 games. And yes, this is pretty clearly our worst patch of form of the season, coming at a crucial time. So let's try and broadly stay on track for just the Hartlepool game. And we've got Joe and Ian on the pod tonight. Joe, I'll come to you first. Congratulations on being married now, since the last time you were on the pod a few weeks ago. And what are your thoughts on the Hartlepool away performance and result?
Yeah, well, obviously, I was on my honeymoon at the weekend, so Hartlepool was not the destination. But I was able to tune in on Saturday afternoon and ruin a lovely day. So, yes, it was interestingly, because I normally watch the stream, but I didn't have that capability. So I tuned into the radio commentary, and I was listening to as Julian often does, the opposition commentary, and it was very one-sided with regards to our performance. That's how it came across on the radio, anyway, from Hartlepool's commentary. It just sounded like we had the ball all the time. I mean, obviously you were there, so you'd be able to sort of clarify this, but it sounded like we had the ball all the time, a lot of possession, a lot of endeavour, and it just sounded basically like we've come up against another goalkeeper in top form. And we just perhaps our finishers, just everything was going in the first half of the season, and now it's not at the crucial end, and that's just it's just a real shame, really. But laws of averages, those games where we scored four or five, we could have really done with maybe a few less and had them at this end of the season. It was a needless penalty to give away. I've watched the highlights. It's just when penalties are given away in that part of the penalty area, it really frustrates me when there's not really a direct chance on goal. And a penalty as a punishment always feels really, really harsh because they probably weren't going to score from that position. They didn't look like scoring. Yeah, gutting really. And you could see instantly Glover's sort of head dropped. We had a new player called Haji Magoma, according to the Hartlepool commentary. Don't know who he is, but he went off injured. So presumably that means Minoga's all right. But no, that's a real shame to lose him through injury. And we had another player called Candy, part of the Forgotten Shots 11. I'd forgotten Candy play for us, but I assume they meant Kaji. But it was good fun listening to the Geordie pronunciations of half our team. Anyway, yeah, just really gutted by the results. I wrote down, I think the goalkeepers have conspired to stop us getting into the playoffs. Yeah, just really gutted. And what a way to ruin a lovely honeymoon.
Yeah, well, apologies. Apologies, we couldn't give you at least a goal. Yeah, we talk about the kind of chances. I can't really tell whether we're having more or less chances. I think we're getting the same amount of half chances and probably less clear-cut chances in the last five games. But I mean, that's just the way a season goes. But yeah, the keepers, the Dorking keeper and Hartlepool's keeper at the weekend definitely kept them in that game and gave them the chance to seal all 3 points with the set piece. Ian, I'm going to come to you next. It's been a while since you've been on the pod and fresh off a coach trip from Newcastle last night. How was your trip up to Hartlepool and your thoughts on the performance?
Well, obviously, I went for the cricket originally, Durham, Hampshire. I didn't see one ball bowled there, so it's been quite a week. Hartlepool game. It might, to me, looking at it and the notes I made at the time was it felt like Aldershot were the home side, that they were trying to have a go. They were taking the game to Hartlepool, and Hartlepool were just happy to sit back and go on the counter, which was the penalty that they won. And the second goal to seal it for them was pretty much again with them counter-attacking because we were trying to get something out of the game. I didn't think we had that many clear-cut chances, though. It seemed like loads of possession, but I'd say the goalkeeper for Hartlepool had a solid game, but I wouldn't say it was up there with the performance of the Dorking keeper on Easter Monday. So just frustrating, sort of played okay, plenty of effort, but no points, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean that's the be all and end all. I think there was maybe two good saves, but they were quite central to him, and kind of looked a bit more acrobatic. So that's probably why we, I don't know, in the aftermath think that that's a better save. So
Yeah, I
yeah.
think they were regulation saves, really, that you'd expect a keeper to make, and that's normally National League's goalkeeper strengths, isn't it? Those sort of shots, whereas the other stuff like the kicking and the positioning and the crosses, they're not so good on. And I think if it had been the other end and Geordie hadn't have got made those saves, we'd be quite disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned their kicking. It's worth mentioning the weather and the wind, which I think I mentioned in the pod previously, but that it just seems to always be like that at Hartlepool. I just have no idea how do you train for that wind?
Wasn't there one Hartlepool goal kick that you managed to kick over their main stand?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but it looked like it was going bang down the middle, and it just took a real left swerving turn and flew away. It was really, I've not seen you know, I've not seen a home keeper struggle with it that much because they have to do that every 2 weeks for an entire season. And he was just kept on kicking it to the touchline where the wind was just taking it that way. If he just hit it straight down the middle, it would have tailed off a bit. But it was infuriating. I don't even support Hartlepool. And I was very worried for Geordie in the second half. But because we were so dominant and feel the need to kick the ball high, we didn't have any of those problems. We just passed it out and progressed up the pitch. The wind was a factor, definitely. But to be honest, I don't think it even played into either team's hands all that much. And I guess the worth mentioning the tour of duty support. It was, someone correct me, how many was it? 3-4-3?
3-4-4.
3-4-4 away at Hartlepool. So fair play to everyone that made the trip up. That's some effort. And as with Ian, we went up for the cricket on the Friday as well. And we're sorely disappointed. No day's play for the entire weekend.
So first game, Hartlepool, tour of duty game. It was great turnout, considering the distance. And I thought everyone was in great voice, great spirits. Really positive experience to be a part of this year, seeing everybody up in Hartlepool. The game itself, I just think we did everything but score. It was very windy up there. That had a huge effect on the game, I feel. We saw that in the first half with some of the goal kicks and some of the passes, how astray they were going. I think they knew that, and that's why they picked to have the more difficult half in the first half, so we can recover from it afterwards and give us the difficult end to the game. The two goals, the penalty was a silly penalty to give away, in my opinion. Going away from goal, not really, it wasn't a danger. We just got hacked down in the box. It was a bit of a shame. The second goal, again, well constructed, I feel. You could blame some of our defending, but I don't think the goal itself, in my opinion, unstoppable. I don't think Geordie was to blame for any of the goals. I actually gave him my man of the match. He coped with the second half very well with the conditions that were there. Made some fantastic saves. And I don't think he put a foot wrong. It was just one of those games, you get it sometimes, where our team's the better team. We do everything on the pitch except for score. And they have two chances. Put them both in the back of the net. And that's 3 points dropped. At the end of the game, I felt we need to get 9 out of 9 in the last three games to push for those playoffs, all depending on the results going around us as well. So it's going to be a very difficult one going from here.
So that defeat left us kind of waiting anxiously for Halifax, who were playing in the half five kickoff at Kidderminster? Or at home to Kidderminster. They were away at Kidderminster. And it was looking okay. It's the first half 0-0, and then Max Wright in the 65th minute, and then again in the 89th minute to make it 2-0 and leapfrog us into seventh place. So Aldershot now out of the playoffs as it stands. Played 43 on 65 points. Halifax played 42 and are on 66 points. So 1 point behind, and there's, I guess we're just going to have to move on to the chaos that is the National League postponements, the weather, and what's going to happen. Halifax were meant to be playing tonight against Oldham. That was called off yesterday. And before we get onto the kind of Gateshead yesterday thing, Gateshead are playing at Fylde tomorrow night, Thursday. And that's got an 11 a.m. pitch inspection tomorrow, so it's not even clear if that's going to go ahead, which would mean that Gates have probably got to play on consecutive days next week. So it's all getting a bit Truro and Taunton, isn't it, Joe?
Oh, actually, I wrote down on my notes, Truro are playing tomorrow and Friday.
Eastbourne and Yeovil, isn't it?
Or yeah, like that. They're playing at they're playing those fixtures at home in Gloucester tomorrow and Friday. That's my shout.
Love it. Yeah, it's been great to watch Truro and Taunton just battle it out and play at home on the same day and different days. So yeah, that's wild enough. So yeah, the top, so that's Oldham in 10th, Halifax in 7th, Gateshead in 6th, and obviously now Oldshaw as well, with games to fit around in the next week, which with the league not budging on the date is going to be quite fun to see things squeezed in. So I suppose let's move on to the postponement saga at Gateshead. Where to begin?
How long have we got?
How long have we got? I don't even know if I should read out the Gateshead statement because it tells us all the things we should have known as things were happening. But we didn't know anything until 6:15 or six that there was a further inspection at 6:45, which is an hour before kickoff. And then we finally found out at 6:30. Was that right, Ian? That there was no, it was even later than that, wasn't
About
it?
6:35,
Mm.
6:40, around about that time.
Yeah. And that's when we knew. I mean, myself and Dan, a friend of the pod, up in Newcastle for the weekend, from looking outside at 10 o'clock in the morning, could tell that there was probably not going to be a game of football on. And looking at the weather radar of 6 hours of straight rain and water flowing down the streets of Newcastle, didn't seem to be a chance. But it was still there was still squeeging water off at about 6:30. So where to begin? I'll come to you first, Ian. What are your thoughts on the postponement and the saga that happened all day yesterday?
Yeah, very unhappy, very unsatisfactory. As mentioned, it's not been a good day or a few days for me and you, as it will, in terms of plans working out. I went home after Hartlepool because I had family stuff to do Sunday, work on Monday. So I got the first flight up to Newcastle on Tuesday morning, arrived about 8 o'clock, drizzling, not too bad at that point. And then probably 9 to 9:30, it started raining quite heavily. And obviously at that point, that's when we understand that the pre-match inspection took place and the local referee ruled it fine, which I'm sure it would have been at that point because it had been a reasonable day on Monday from what I gather. So all of that fine. But this is where you think surely Gateshead should be announcing that to say we've had a pre-inspection, we're okay for now, but we've got 5, 6 hours heavy rain forecast. So just again, nothing. They must have scheduled their social media posts because they're just announcing completely random things throughout the day. And that's just seeing so many angry replies going, is there a pitch inspection? Come on, Aldershot fans need to be able to make a decision. Just nothing. Complete silence. Aldershot themselves couldn't really communicate anything because they probably think, courtesy to Gateshead, that they've got to kind of follow what the home team says. And it just got later and later. And then I think it was about 4:30, finally, gradually began to ease off. I walked past the ground on the way to the pub. And I sort of peered through and could see 10 to 15 people sort of squeegeeing the pitch. It wasn't quite like Wrexham at home a few years ago when the Wrexham players were trying to towel off the pitch, but it did seem a little bit of a lost cause from the 6-inch gap I was able to peer through between the gate and the wall of the turnstile. So yeah, just went to the pub, met up with yourself, Will, and yeah, enjoyed your company, have a few pints and sort of discussed the prospects of play. But then anxiety really kicked in because it was just all eyes refreshing social media to see what news there was going to be. And then it just kept later and later. And for a while, when it got later and later, you thought, well, maybe they are giving every chance to play. Perhaps we'll start later because, of course, We were at 7:20. No teams had been announced, nothing like that. So later start looked very likely, if one at all. But there was also the other possibility that there was arguing going on and disagreement on the state of the pitch, which, again, depending on who you want to believe, Gateshead suggesting that Aldershot didn't want a game. But again, that's very bizarre reasoning, I think, because it's the referee's decision. Referee is independent. There's no sense in value in Aldershot wanting to have the game off, because it would surely mean a Thursday night trip ahead of 36 hours later, the final away game at Dagenham. Unless it is some like master plan that Tetek and Barham are so close to coming back from injury, and Minoga as well, that maybe we are trying for that, but I think that's massively, massively unlikely. And then, yeah, the eventual postponement, 7:35, very disappointed. And you kind of at that point thought, fair enough, Gateshead, you've tried to get a game on. Sure, you've done all you can, but whatever they did was never going to be enough with that rainfall. But then that's when the accusations and the statements started coming out that, rather annoyed us, to put it politely, I think is the best way of putting it. And I just don't understand where Gateshead are coming from here. Just, why haven't they gone after the ref? Have they not gone after the ref because you can't really go after referees? They're pretty much untouchable. And they decided to turn it round into Aldershot's blame. The only thing we can think of as a logical explanation was that Aldershot turned up at 5:30 and just said, look, come on, you got no chance. Let's be realistic. Are you going to be able to get the pitch ready in time? And that's been misconstrued as we didn't want to play. So yeah, I've waffled on quite lengthy there, but had a lot I wanted to get off my chest on this matter.
No, absolutely. Yeah, so it's as you say, we're in the Schooner, the pub near the ground, had a few beers. And yeah, and then it kind of, I think it was like 7:25. There's just kind of a rumble, and everyone just going, game off, game off. So yeah, that was quite a weird experience. I've never had that before, where a game's been postponed, despite knowing it all day, pretty much, that it was never going to be on. That's by the by when you've travelled that far up. I suppose the only other thing to mention is, yeah, so the ref deemed the pitch unplayable, but was in contact with the National League about a delayed kickoff of up to an hour. And that's the part that Aldershot rejected, or whatever word that is being used, against Gateshead. And as yet, we've not had like a statement from Aldershot. I imagine they'll want to refute some of those claims, or explain something a little bit more, because it leaving it open-ended basically means that Gateshead can just keep throwing blame on Aldershot for the situation, which I don't think is the full truth. I'll come to you next, Joe. What were your thoughts on the postponement saga at Gateshead?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit ashamed to admit I spent about 7 hours on Twitter yesterday from the moment it's the bits started coming through.
Easily done,
I
easily
thought it was
done.
really amusing until the point I thought it was really amusing to the point I remembered people had actually travelled up there, and that's just really not funny at all. And some people have been there for 3 or 4 days. I mean, that the picture that came through first on social media was the mid-afternoon picture, and it looked like a flooded, well, it looked like some of the fields around where I live. And not even the cows can go in. So it's it was awful, awful conditions. I didn't see how at any point you'd get a game on there. I've just taken a look at the FA's pitch inspection guidance. You might find it interesting. When I asked to undertake a pitch inspection, you do so professionally and remembering the overriding factor of player safety. At the forefront of your mind, you must always think, is the playing surface safe to play on? Arrive in plenty of time to ensure the inspection is complete in good time. Keep both clubs informed as and when appropriate. Prior to reaching the decision, the referee who is making the inspection should consider the following: whether or not the ground is dangerous, whether or not conditions are or could turn farcical, the views of the home club groundsman in terms of local knowledge and draining capabilities in the event of standing water. Sounds familiar. This is my favourite bit. It is not acceptable just to take a cursory look at the field of play in normal dress, i.e. a suit or a blazer. Sports kit should be worn along with appropriate footwear. All areas of the pitch should be inspected. Get a forecast if necessary. I imagine there was probably some rain forecast on the day before when they made that initial inspection. Also consider the manpower available to the home club to carry out any necessary work to make the ground playable. And also consider the time the visiting club are due to commence their journey. I mean, considering there are fans in the ground at 20 past seven and the game and still not being postponed. And also liaise, this is the bit that's probably causing a bit of conflict, liaise with managers to gauge the thoughts of both clubs. And at some point, it is also important to tell the competition, league or county, depending on the game you're refereeing. So that's probably the bit in conjunction with the National League that you mentioned. But yeah, I thought there's a lot there that basically screams this should have been cancelled or postponed way before it did, and how it ever got to this point, considering it is, you know, one of the referee's basic jobs is to call that off. You cannot leave it that late. And even when I refereed youth football a few years ago, you make the decision way before, and that was at, you know, people have been traveling 5 minutes, let alone, you know, 13, 14 hour round trips. Yeah, it's an absolute farce. The state, I think both clubs know they've got a lot of well, Gateshead especially know they're going to have to get their fixtures in now. They probably were. I can totally understand why they were desperate to get the game on, but the collateral of the effect of what it's had on our fans, and probably even local fans who've travelled to get to the stadium. You know, not all home fans live within, you know, they would have been home fans who've travelled long distances as well. And how it ever got to that point, we'll look back and laugh, but right now it's just really not funny for those fans who've made that journey. And I think if we do play that game again next week, it's going to be on the Thursday, and probably less than 36 hours till our game, which kicks off at 12:15 on the final Saturday. So if it was a decision based on saving some of our players' legs, that doesn't add up based on how that would work next week.
Yes, and herein lies the problem and the conundrum for the fixture list and trying to get these games in. I mean, Halifax have got their kind of pitch worries at the moment and are probably going to play that on neutral ground somewhere nearby due to the overlapping rugby league being played on their ground. Whereas Gateshead have just, you know, have had a 7 or 8 hour deluge, and yeah, I think any other time of the season it would have been called off from that, you know, or we would have been told about the preliminary pitch inspection, and then surely, well, we would have known about a forecast, and the forecast was saying heavy rain for the next 6 hours at least, and it did brighten up at like 4:30. It was a lovely, lovely evening, to be honest, until me, Ian, and Dan tried to go to the a different pub that had TNT Sports to watch the Champions League, at which point it rained for 20 more minutes. So, you know, one of those, even during the match, it would have been raining.
I feel that rain shower could have been enough if it had started to, as Joe puts in his thing, could have descended into farce. So, yeah, don't see how it was going to ever pass.
No, or at least it wouldn't have made the full 90 minutes, at least, I don't think. From what I saw last night.
The crucial bit is, in all of the guidance in every basic referee, it's the referee's decision if a game gets postponed. If a manager just, there's no way a manager can just say, oh, well, we're not actually that sure. He says he can consult with the managers, but if the referee feels that the game can go ahead, the game can go ahead. That he is their decision. It also says on this guidance, be seen to be active and inspect thoroughly.
Love that. Just be seen to look. That's why they chuck the ball so high, isn't it? It looks more active, dynamic.
My favourite bit was the sand coming out of the long jump pit that I saw in the video.
The best thing I saw yesterday, definitely. That really brightened up a terrible situation.
Yeah. You're going to feel for those long jumpers when they're landing on a cold bit of concrete.
Well, Julian, you've popped on the call since we were discussing, and before it, we throw some more shade at Gateshead or the weather. What are your thoughts on the Gateshead postponement saga?
Well, one word, Will, is unbelievable. Actually, two words, absolutely unbelievable. I didn't obviously go up to Gateshead, but the first I heard that it was postponed was the first I heard about anything was literally at about 20 to 8. It was just absolutely ridiculous. And a little bit like Joe afterwards, I was intrigued with what was going on Twitter, and so much being thrown at Aldershot. There was a clip of someone having a go at the players on the sideline, saying that it was their fault. I think, as you said earlier on, Will, we need to probably hear something from officially from Aldershot to really understand what's happened. But no, farcical, to be honest. And I even saw something on Twitter which had a JCB digger trying to move some sand from the long jump and then getting stuck in the long jump pit. It was just something that you would never ever see before and will never see again. But I think what it has done is it's really fired up everybody. The Aldershot supporters, the players, whoever's fault it was. And it's got to, I think Joe said it's got to be down to the ref, surely. I mean, even if our guys had said, look, we're not keen on playing, it's not up to us to postpone the match, it's up to the ref. So the refs made two, three, four, five mistakes throughout the whole day by the sounds of it. So, I don't think we should take any of the blame. But I tell you what, that game next Thursday is going to be tasty.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the JCB digger clip, if you haven't seen it, me and Joe just mentioned it there. Go and seek it out. It's comedy gold. On a day that was filled with disappointment and frustration, that made it all worth it, if I'm honest. That and the pints of pale ale in the schooner. So yeah, as you say, Thursday, next week will probably be the day that that game gets played. No confirmation on that as yet. And yeah, hopefully we get a kind of statement to kind of clear off some of these things being thrown at us.
I think, Will, as a general thing, the National League have got to look at themselves and say what is actually going on here. It's not just Gateshead. Halifax, I think you mentioned the Halifax pitch was an absolute state. And of course, with our West Country correspondent Joe in situ, if he hasn't told us already, Truro have got eight home games in 2 weeks, which is it's just not acceptable. And actually, Truro's home games are 105 miles away. So, it's just really unacceptable. And the National League have got to look at it and learn some lessons for sure. Whether that means that we extend the league, whether it means we start earlier, I don't know. But, it can't happen, can't continue to happen like this.
Yeah, and I mean it's an unprecedented kind of thing. I've never seen it at this late in the season to have this many postponements and so many games to squeeze in. You've got Gateshead with FA Trophy commitments forcing our game to get postponed in the first place, and then it's been postponed for a waterlogged pitch. You've got Halifax pitch being used for rugby league because that's overlapping. Fylde, I mean, I don't know what's going on there, but they can't really. I mean, half the games look or half the pitch looks like sand. I mean, Wealdstone, when we played there in earlier this year, it was not a good pitch, and they've had to squeeze games in as well. So yeah, definitely something that National League should be a bit more flexible with, because when you've got something as unprecedented as this, you need to be a bit flexible. Like, had this happened, in January and February when pitches get frozen or pitches, we get snowfall or something, then it'd be understandable because you would know the plan. But now it's happening 2 weeks before the end of season, and there's no wiggle room. It is going to be a farce next week, and I don't, I feel sorry for Gateshead because they've got to squeeze all these games in, and it's only because the fact they've done well in the FA Trophy that
No,
they've got to.
I
I'm
would
with
have
Ian on
felt
that.
sorry for them,
Yeah,
but
I'm not feeling
not
sorry for
after yesterday. No, they could
them.
absolutely
Now, wasn't it? It was Gateshead who had the points deduction that allowed us to stay up. Now, what if it was Gateshead that had the points deduction that allowed us to creep into the playoffs? Wouldn't that just be poetic?
The Reprieve Derby. Huge.
Going to Gateshead. The day I travelled up there, we knew nothing about the pitch. We knew nothing from the club about how bad it was going to be, if there was going to be a pitch inspection. So I got on the coach for about 12 o'clock in the morning. We knew nothing, basically, except for the fans were saying overnight it had been a massive amount of rainfall in the local area. A lot of the Shots fans and Gateshead fans were saying, look, don't come up because it's going to be called off. We started off anyway, heading up to Gateshead. By about 2, 3 o'clock, we were about two thirds of the way there, and there was pictures of the pitch completely waterlogged. And people saying just turn the coach around and come back. The consensus on the coaches would rather be there and it be postponed than head back and the games go on and not be there to support the club. So we all decided to carry on, get to the ground because we'd not heard anything official from the club. We arrive at 6:30 for the pitch, still being waterlogged. And we find out from one of the volunteers that are helping trying to clear the pitch that there's a pitch inspection for 6:45 p.m. The first we knew about it was 6:30 in the evening, which, yeah, I'll get onto my collective thoughts of that at the end. So I thought I'd take a good view, watch the pitch inspection, saw the ref walk out of a football and bounce a ball, just literally stuck to the ground, didn't bounce at all. So we heard that the ref was then going to go back out at 7:15 because Gateshead said, can you give us a little bit more time? We can delay the kickoff in order to get this game done because they were desperate to get this game done. So the ref went back out there, 7:15, went to bounce the ball again. And again, on one side of the pitch, it just sank into the ground again. So the referee called it off as an unsafe pitch. It's not ideal for a 300-mile journey. But it's one of these things. I know there was a lot on social media about the Gateshead players accusing, and staff as well, accusing Aldershot of not wanting to play the game, accusing the players of not wanting to play the game. And the fact that that Tommy was being tactical in the fact that they would now get to face us after four games in 5 days. I don't see this. In my opinion of the whole scenario is that firstly, it should be highlighted of how much work the Gateshead staff put to getting this game going. They were constantly out there sweeping, trying to move even sand onto the pitch to try and absorb all the water. They did everything they could to try and get this game going. The downside really is there was no communication. I feel this is down to mainly the home team because every game I've been to, if there's been a pitch inspection, it's always been on the home team to put that there's a pitch inspection due to come up. We heard nothing, absolutely nothing, until 6:45 in the evening, which, yeah, is just if you're making a 300-mile trip, call it off earlier. That's all they needed to do. On their side of saying that Aldershot didn't want to play the game, my question to them is, if their workplace was unsafe, would you want to go and still work, knowing it's unsafe, knowing you could get injured? It's their livelihoods we're talking about. I spoke to a few players after the game, and that was a really nice touch actually, because they all came out. Players come to all the fans, welcome, basically thank them. For making the big trip up, and were actually very apologetic that we couldn't play the game, and we kind of said, "Well, you can't help the weather." For me, it was really cool because I got to speak to a lot of the players you don't normally speak to. So had a good chat with Josh Stokes, and Hugo as well, just about the pitch. And they just said it was just unsafe to play on, to the point one of the coaching staff said to me that they took one step on the pitch and they just knew that it wouldn't be playable. And that was about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening. Just took one step on the pitch, knew it was unsafe. And that was that, really. But yeah, it was just, for me, it was just a little bit, yeah. I honestly would just want to know why the communication wasn't there. Because to make 300 miles there to find out when you get up there that the first piece of communication is when you're there is, for me, not good enough. We got back about 2:30 in the morning. We suspect the arranged game will be played on the Thursday. If that's the case, I don't think I'm going to get the time off to be able to go back up. But again, it could be another 300-mile trip for it to be moved or postponed. So any Shots fans going up on that coach who went up on the last coach would have travelled about 1,200 miles for one football fixture, which I think is absolutely madness, in my opinion. But yeah, it is what it is. The Thursday, take into account that we'll have two games in 36 hours, away at Gateshead and away at Dagenham, so it's two away games. I just want the game to go ahead, if I'm honest. I think it will. I think they'll do everything they can. I think the weather will brighten up, but it will be on to the next game at, so it'll be at home to Boreham Wood.
Right. Well, let's park the Gateshead postponement saga. Something we'll come back to again and again and again until Saturday week, which is the last game of the season against Dag Red. This weekend is the last home game of the season and a 5:30 kickoff. I'm going to say last home game of the season. It probably is. I don't think we can come fourth or fifth. So this is the last one. So get it in now. 5:30 kickoff on TNT Sports. So that kind of means that we're going to be watching all the results come in that are kind of going to be crucial to our positioning at the end of the season. Halifax are playing at home to Barnet. Maidenhead, Gateshead are also playing. And then you've got Southend and Oldham, who are pretty much out of it. But you never know with this league, and Oldshot's form has kind of stuttered. Halifax have got a load of games to squeeze in. So there's a potential that one of those two could sneak into that last place. Yeah, let's start. Boreham Wood, Luke Gerrard, their long-serving manager, he's leaving at the end of the season. So he's going to try and keep them up. They beat Wealdstone last week to move into 21st. So they are now in prime position to get out of relegation zone. And yeah, Tishimanga is their striker and always seems to score against us, in my head at least. So I'm going to come to you first. Julian, how are you feeling ahead of Boreham Wood at home and it being the last game, a home game of the season?
I'm really looking forward to it. Well, it's going to be, a really interesting game. It's a good choice from TNT to choose this one because, you know, we're still in the playoff picture. Boreham Wood has still got something to fight for. There's the story about Luke Gerrard as well. I think it's going to be a really, really good game. I think we're going to win. I'm really confident that we will win, actually, because I think it's about time that this little mini slump is over. I think after the Gateshead debacle, I think we'll have a shot in the arm. We may even have one or two players back as well, possibly. So I'm really confident that we will win. And I think it is an advantage having the late kickoff because, you know, that we just don't know how these results are going to go, and you can't predict any of the results in this league anymore. So, we'll know what we need to do. I think we will still be in it when we kick off. So we'll have the incentive to really go for it. Being really positive now, there's going to be a full length East Bank in tune with everybody. So TV cameras there as well. It's all set up for a really, really good game.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I completely forgot about the East Bank being fully open. Yeah, this week has been a blur already. So looking forward to that. I'll come to you next, Ian. You're next on my screen. What do you think about the game and the kind of timing of the game? Will that have any influence for you?
Yeah, nervous about the game just because we unfortunately lost form at a crucial time. But equally, again, it's not a bad team to be playing in that down the bottom. Hopefully that will spark us into some life and we'll go and do a job on them. And Julian rightly points out that the other fixtures are very much up in the air. You can't say for certain. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're at 5:30 on Saturday that a win puts us back into a playoff position. And even a draw will keep it alive. Again, you can see Will's face going, no, you've cursed it, but we've got to be positive. We're still a good team and just need to get over this little slump, and hopefully Saturday is where it begins to turn back around.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the game that a few weeks ago we were looking at and saying it's an opportunity at the end of the season, for sure. A struggling Boreham Wood, although they look potentially on the verge of being able to get out of that situation. And Joe, how are you feeling ahead of the last home game of the season?
Yeah, it's a little bit typical, isn't it, that Boreham Wood have just had a run of 6 straight defeats and they've just turned it around just before they play us. So we'll now be far more confident than they would have been a week ago. It's going to be really interesting to see what the Halifax result is going into our game. If they were to lose that game, they're playing Barnet, it's a really tough game. If they're to lose that, that will really, I think, actually pile the pressure on us, but probably means we have to go for it. Whereas if those games were played at the same time, we might have been a bit more tentative. So it'll be interesting to see what that result is, because it will definitely affect how we play. Looking at the playoff situation, I think I said 3 or 4 weeks ago, I don't say many right things, but I said don't write off Halifax. And here we are now chasing them. And they were about 7 or 8 points adrift, and their form hasn't dipped really at all. I think after we played them, I said that they're an okay side, but they were well drilled, and I think they work hard, they're picking up enough points, and teams are struggling to break them down. And I thought Solihull as well might have had a little blip, but when they won, I think it was on Tuesday night, they that sort of secured their place now. So it really is between us and Halifax and potentially Gateshead, and really depends on how they get on with their 97 fixtures they've got in the next week and a half. So be really interested to see how it goes, and fingers crossed for a result against Boreham Wood. Luke Garrard's been there for years. I was just reading their club statement. They said we wanted him to have a good send off and not to be remembered for one disastrous season, which I thought was a bit of a bit of a juxtaposed, really, isn't it? Have a nice send off and not be remembered for a disastrous season. And he's always in the running for any National League and League Two and even League One job when it comes up. I think he's done amazing things there, really, because I know they're not poor budget wise, but he's done a lot to keep a relatively small team in the division, and it'd be interesting to see where he ends up, because there'll doubtless be a lot of managerial vacancies at the end of this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and at points fighting towards the right end of the season, right end of the table. So I'm sure he'll go on to probably League Two, I imagine, by the end of, well, very soon after the end of the season, to be honest. I'm sure someone will have him lined up. I've kind of explained the kind of table situation. Aldershot with 3 games to go. That is on par with most teams. Gateshead have only played 41, so they've got 5 to get in the next 11 days. I'm meant to be playing Thursday night. Yes, and then I suppose, as you mentioned there, the dips in form that teams have had. I mean, we've seen we've seen Altrincham and we've seen Gateshead and we've seen even Halifax as well go on those like 5-game losing streaks, but they did it 2 months ago. So it kind of it does definitely come back to the timing of our blip. And yeah, I'm hoping it's a perfect opportunity after having two goals in 5 games and plenty of chances and plenty of maybe bad luck to score some goals. And hopefully we can do that against Boreham Wood on Saturday. Yeah, I suppose the only other we've got any other business, and it's another social media thing, because Monday afternoon or Monday morning, a story came out in Bristol Live about Jamie Hedges, Aldershot's head of recruitment, where he worked at his hometown and season tickets holding club Bristol Rovers under Tommy Widdrington. And yeah, the story kind of talks about his career and how he's like the youngest head of recruitment in football, those kind of things. But he does mention Joey Barton, who came in, and the main kind of thing that's been clipped out is about him, Joey Barton, basically being irate about the kind of quality of staff around him. So he offers or asks Jamie Hedges to do 50 keepy uppies outside. He laughs it off. And then, yeah, still makes him do it in front of all the staff. He manages two, apparently. That's what Joey came out and said. So he admits that he did it. So, yeah, a weird day where Joey Barton's tweeting about Jamie Hedges and Tommy Widdrington. So I don't know if anyone's got anything to add since that. It's been a bit of a whirlwind of a week for an Aldershot fan.
I lived in Bristol for a couple of years, and I've got a couple of good mates that still live in Bristol, big gas heads. And at the time when Tommy became manager, and then they saw, one of my friends saw that Jamie Hedges had come over, that he said to us, "You've got a really good team there, Jamie. I didn't want to see Jamie go." He's actually retrospectively been seen to have brought in a couple of the shining lights in their current squad in the last few years. That Joey Barton actually benefited from. And yeah, I won't say Joey Barton's name too much because I know whose side of the story I'd rather believe of the two people mentioned there, and it's certainly not Joey's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it needs to be said, then Joey Barton's a... So fill in the gaps.
I think the problem here, though, is I do wonder how sort of well-advised Jamie was in doing this story and sort of mentioning that, because obviously Joe Barton is in that position of starting arguments in empty rooms at the minute. And yeah, he's obviously brought Tommy into it as well, sort of making a few suggestions around deals that he did, etc., which isn't very good. And yeah, just completely agree on what you've both said there.
Grant and Julian, anything to add on that saga?
Yeah, I was. My first question was, why now? Why has this story come out now? And normally, when a story comes out, there's a reason for it. But I'm still scratching my head as to understand what the reason is. Yeah, it's almost like yesterday's news, in a sense. Really quickly, I think it would quickly be forgotten. I think Joey did actually ask for the Bristol Live to remove the post, otherwise his legal team will be on the case. So I don't know whether that's happened just yet, but I was wondering whether we should ask Jamie onto the pod and see if we can challenge him to a keepy uppy session.
Yeah, we'll make it more manageable. Maybe not keepy uppies. Maybe like 50 name 50 very good under 21 players that are on your list, don't do that. We need them. Anyway, yeah. So I think that where the story came from was just him having that. Must have just had a sit down interview about his career, really. Because the main story is that he's the youngest head of recruitment. It just so happens that he had some dirt to give on Joey Barton. So I'm sure in the interview, it maybe didn't even want to go down that route. But he just asked him about, well, what happened? What happened when Joey got rid of you? You seemed to go in, and then he would have just been like, "Oh yeah, it was horrible." And "Oh yeah, he asked me to do this thing once." And the interviewer must have been licking his lips because he was like, "This is gonna, this is ideal. As soon as you mention Joe Barton and anything, you're going to get clicks, and it's already on like the Mail Online the next day, really, as like a quoted story, which is where they just basically just pull a load of things from social media and say, here's the debate and here's the saga. So
I thought it was quite odd that Joey basically said it's a pack of lies and then finished it off with he only did two keepy uppies, and the second one wasn't a good one either.
Yeah, he was stretching for it. Which, I mean, if you can't do keepy uppies, like, you can't do keepy uppies. I mean, God, annoyed. We should all do 50 keepy uppies for Jamie Hedges.
To be fair, I don't think being able to do keepy uppies is the barometer to being a good footballer, because I've never actually seen a footballer do that in a match. Like maybe once, like Ronaldinho or something. Like I'd much rather like Josh Stokes scores goals and stood in the centre circle and did 50 keepy ups, you know. So
That's true. It's like those what was that player that went to Real Madrid? Was it Gareth Bale's keepy uppies when he got signed? They're really bad. Like just kind of he's jogging all over the place trying to keep him up. I love that, to be honest. I mean Dean Morgan did some good keepy uppies away at Cheltenham, so before that goal.
If you Google Lee Trundle, he's got some great stuff on that he used to do in the matches.
Lovely so, Trundle.
Yeah, spend a few minutes on Lee Trundle Googling, you'll not regret it.
Yeah. He's probably still doing it now, isn't he? He went way into his like 40s, didn't he? Doing lower league. I remember because he popped up a few years ago with that penalty where he looks like he's bending down to put his laces on. Tie his laces up and just pops it in the top corner.
I was listening to Under the Cosh podcast on the way back from Hartlepool. It was the Lee Trundle episode. He's still playing like Sunday football now, and yeah, went on a while. It's quite interesting listening to that one.
Yeah, yeah. My dad always says the Under the Cosh podcast is great. So yeah, I don't know.
Not as good as this one though.
Oh no. You know, it's always after. I always find when the Flames go up, then Under the Cosh, you'll have a brilliant morning. So hope you're all enjoying your coffees. Great. We'll leave the Jamie Hedges, Joey Barton saga there. And I think that's about it for this week, this fun-filled week. And
can I just add to some AOB quickly, Will?
Yes, absolutely.
Tamworth promoted from the National North officially on Saturday. 27 goals conceded in 44 games.
We could only dream
in the National League. Yeah, in the National League North, which is a notoriously, you know, tough division full of a lot of goals. New ground for me to tick off next season, hopefully. Just up the M5 again, not too bad. I think they're still a part-time side, as far as I'm aware. So to have won that division so comfortably is really, really impressive. So it'd be interesting to see when they come up, how much of their squad they keep together, because they're coming up as a very strong side.
Yeah, and they're back
double promotion as well. They went into that league last year, I think.
Mm.
So yeah, double promotion.
They could be going for a third. Who knows? And then in the other league, we've got Yeovilaar ahead, but there's still a very small chance that Maidstone can catch them up, I think. But with some games in hand, I think. But yeah, it's looking likely like Yeovilaar are going to win the league. Stuttering as they do, I can't believe they've left it this late. Considering where they were in January, so that won't be a new ground for many, but it's still nice to welcome them back. Cool, we'll end it there, and hopefully the next time we're on, we have an answer of when Gates is definitely going to be, and that we're probably still seventh. Hopefully, well, not still seventh, we're seventh again. Until next time. Now, you've come to the part of the podcast now where I try and describe the weekend, but I've kind of alluded to some parts of it. In an ideal world, and we don't live in an ideal world, of course, but the ideal plan was Friday, Durham versus Hampshire, day one. Perfect. We see the last two sessions. Lovely. Then we get a train back up to all the way up to Newcastle, change back down to Hartlepool along the coastal train, lovely night out in Hartlepool, and then Saturday, boom, park run, Hartlepool away, we win probably, and then Sunday, me and Dan, my mate, go to go to Newcastle and wait it out until Gateshead away. That was the dream. That was the dream. No cricket on Friday. So that ruined things there. My mate Anthony, Arsenal season ticket holder, come up for the weekend after a night of some lovely pints. Played a load of pool, played a load of darts. He's come out. He's looked up. And that's the thing with Anthony. He's looked up. He should have looked down. There's a curb. He falls over on his ankle and stumbles into the road. That was a twisted ankle, very swollen ankle. Garden peas were needed. Can't be sourced at about 1 a.m. So, or 12 o'clock or whatever it was. So, I just had to listen. Well, we all had to listen to him wincing at night, which was, you know, looking back, shouldn't have been funny, but it was really funny. You know, get better soon, Anton. He's off to Belfast this weekend. So, you know, hopefully he can walk around. But, it basically meant on Saturday we couldn't really walk very, very far or many places. So we just went to the same pub that we were in before, and were accosted by locals. Who somehow were about 14 pints deep at about 6 o'clock in the afternoon, in the evening, I suppose. I'll let the rest of it play out. But I mean, we still went to Newcastle. It's still a lovely time, despite the rain and the wind and me not winning any bets at the Newcastle horse races on Monday. But I did get to go around the track, and annoyingly, I tweeted saying the pitch looks great. Well, the pitch looks fine. Which was little did I know that 24 hours later it would be like the exact time where things were starting to kick off with preliminary pitch inspections. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I hope you're okay with me not putting in tipsy sound recordings from the weekend, because it's generally the most embarrassing thing I've ever listened to. So my advice is don't drink and podcast. Don't drink and do many things. To be fair, don't drink and fall over a curb. But those are just two. Send in your suggestions. Don't drink and watch Aldershot. I'm not sure. Anyway, hope you enjoyed episode 19. We'll be back again next week with episode 20. How's that happened? Which will be basically the last one of the season before we go into, we'll go into some end of season stuff, sure. And then we'll probably have a break. But I'm sure there'll be some intermittent ones further across the summer. So don't despair. But I need a break as well. This season has been amazing and full on. And looking forward to having a break and then just soaking up the transfer rumours as Jamie Hedges, as we mentioned earlier, goes into his Rolodex of players and picks us out some more gems. Anyway, I'm rambling. Hope you had a great time on your trips up to Hartlepool and Gateshead. And if you're going up again next Thursday, whenever it is, then I salute you. But maybe we can get some sort of live thing going on if we can source the game. Hopefully it's on National League TV. I'm basically talking to myself at this point. See you later. Goodbye. Up the shots.